Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, on the web at mathworks.com.
Now, the bells above St. Peter's Square are ringing. Thousands are cheering. After witnessing white smoke coming from the smokestack above the Sistine Chapel, this has all just happened in the last few minutes, all apparently confirming that a new pope has been elected. We'll have the latest news for you from Rome and the Vatican in just a moment. But first, the U.S. State Department has decided not to include a tally of worldwide terrorist attacks in its annual report, Patterns of Global Terrorism, a decision first reported by a former CIA official on his weblog. Last year, the State Department claimed worldwide terrorist incidents had fallen dramatically in 2003 and credited the administration's war on terror for the success. But it had to withdraw that report after it was discovered the numbers were grossly inaccurate and that, in fact, attacks had gone up that year. Henry Waxman, Democratic Representative of California, did his own calculations and called the State Department on the conclusions then, and he joins us now. Congressman, what do you make of the most recent announcement that the tally of attacks won't even be included this year?
I find it perplexing. Under the law, the State Department is supposed to do a report on terrorist trends, and they're suggesting that they can do the report without giving us the data. I don't know what the report's going to be based on except the data, and the only reason we found out their report for 2003 was so out of whack was that we were able to look at the data and see that their conclusions didn't hold up.
Well, the State Department spokesman is saying that the numbers will be revealed at some point, but they're going to be composed by another agency, the newly formed National Counterterrorism Center, seeming to say that it's a nod to the new agency that they should take over that reporting. Your thoughts?
The National Counterterrorism Agency did the work last time. They did it at the request of the State Department. So that isn't changing. What has changed is that there's a new top person in charge of all intelligence, Mr. Negroponte, should he be confirmed. But that should keep the State Department from getting the data and then releasing it as part of its report. It just seems to me that what they're in effect doing is keeping people from being able to analyze whether their report is correct or not. The State Department was very embarrassed last year. Even Secretary Powell called me to tell me how embarrassed he was that the report was so wrong. Now we have Secretary Rice, and she didn't even bother to notify Congress that she's not going to give us an honest report. She's going to give us her conclusions or somebody in the State Department's conclusions, and then they're going to withhold the data. I'm very suspicious of what they're up to.
Well, in fact, the Washington Post is reporting that the State Department had already this year circulated secret early versions of the annual report with the statistics included. And again, I'm quoting from the Washington Post, that report and those statistics reportedly showed another increase in terrorist acts over last year. Were you aware of a secret report?
I wasn't aware of that, but I think that's what's driving all of this. There has been an increase in terrorist attacks around the world, and they want to keep that under wraps.
Do you plan on taking any action, Representative Waxman? We said that there was a secret report said to have been released. Do you plan on trying to get that? What happens now?
We're going to have to see if we can get the Republicans in charge of the Congress to hold some hearings on it and bring Secretary Rice and the people from the Counterterrorism Agency before us and try to find out on the record why they're changing what has been the way this report has been done. I think Secretary Rice wanted to eliminate the report completely, but she couldn't do that because there's a law that requires her to do the report. Now what she's doing is issue a report, but not share the data. And if we got the data, we would get it later, and then people's attention would be focused on other issues.
Henry Waxman, Democratic congressman from California, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Congressman Waxman, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Just a few minutes before noon, East Coast time, white smoke appeared in the smokestack above the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican in Rome. The crowds are now crying, Viva il Papa, long live the Pope, and apparently a Pope has been chosen at the conclave in Rome. We're going to go now to Anthony Maianlotti. He's the author of the upcoming book, The Families Who Made Rome, and he is in his apartment in Rome. And Anthony, I understand that bells are ringing now. Do you hear them?
I can. I'm trying to angle my phone so that you can hear them too. Down below in the street, I can see crowds of people making their way towards the bridge to the Casa Sant'Angelo, which is the biggest pedestrian bridge on the way to the Vatican, and the traditional way for people to get from this side of the river across to St. Peter's.
We understand that the crowd has been cheering since the wisps of white smoke were seen from the smokestack. Yesterday there was a false alarm. The smoke from the smokestack coincided with the noon lunch bells, and it was a false alarm. Is it clear that this is the real thing?
This is the real thing. We were waiting for a long time. There was a stressful period when we were waiting for the smoke to come out. And then when the smoke came out, it was white and unequivocally white. And now there was a period of waiting for the bells to ring, and now they started to ring. Seeing as it's now almost 6:15 in the evening, Rome time, it's not the traditional time for the bells to be ringing. This can't be a mistake. We have a pope.
Well, in Vatican Radio, we now understand, is also now announcing that a new pope has been elected. Anthony, you're familiar with this process. What happens now?
At this point, we have about a half hour to 45 minute wait for the Pope to be vested in his new robes, and for the Cardinal Chamberlain to come out on the central porch of St. Peter's above the main front entrance, to announce to the world with the appearance of the new Pope with the famous words, "Annuntio vobis gaudium magnum, habemus papam." I announce to you a great joy. We have a pope, and that's going to happen very soon.
We understand,
and then we'll know the identity of the new man.
Right, and Anthony, we understand that once the pope is elected, he still may refuse the office, although obviously Vatican rules, you know, aim to discourage someone from doing that. And then he is immediately asked what name he wishes to take. Does that happen right, you know, before he is announced? Will he be announced? Which name will he be announced with?
He will be announced with his new name. But they will first announce the name that he had as cardinal, and then announce the name that he will take as pope. And of course, the new pope, can refuse the job. But the fact that the bells are ringing and the smoke went out means that he has accepted. And in fact, in the last constitution that John Paul II wrote for the conclave, he strongly urged the chosen cardinal, whoever he was, not to resist the will of the divine spirit and to accept the job.
The divine spirit, as seen as the church sees it through the cardinals, a 2/3 majority is required for a new leader to be elected. Anthony, you've watched several of these conclaves. Tell us, this has been how many days, and how does that sort of fit into how many days it usually takes to elect a pope?
Well, with this conclave, I'm surprised that it's happened very quickly, but because the pope changed the rules. The late popes changed the rules to allow a simple majority of 58 cardinals to elect a pope after 30 failed scrutinies and an attempt to elect a 2/3 majority pope. So clearly what's going on here is that we've achieved a consensus pope, someone who the 2/3 majority has accepted, and after that, I guess we're going to have to see who he's going to be. But we were all anticipating about a 5-day conclave. However, the rumor ran around the city earlier today that Cardinal Ratzinger, who was the front runner, was considered to be unlikely to have reached the necessary 2/3 majority, and that he was therefore going to throw his weight behind a compromise candidate. We're going to have to see whether that's come to pass. We really have no idea at this point.
Anthony Maiolatti is reporting for us from his apartment in Rome. He's an author and reporter, and he's overlooking the scene of, it appears to be hundreds of Italians running towards the square because of the ringing of the bells and the wisp of white smoke, which came just a few minutes before 12 noon East Coast time, and now Vatican Radio also announcing and confirming the smoke signals and sounds of the bells, confirming that a new pope has been elected. Anthony, we understand from that moment, it's about 45 minutes before the pope, the new pope, comes out. What else happens in that time?
Well, the cardinals are unlocked from the conclave, number one. They begin to make to proceed towards St. Peter's Square, and the Pope himself, the new Pope, will be vested in one of the three new suits that has been put together for him. There's a tall suit, a small suit, and a medium one. It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. And he's given the suit, ask what name he will choose, and then he will make a private prayer and make his way out onto the balcony.
Does he at all interact with each of those, there's 115, I think, cardinals. Does he interact with each of them in this time period, or does that come at another time?
That happens afterwards. Right now, the first goal is to present the Pope to the faithful.
And what happens in that room when it's announced to the cardinals? I mean, it's veiled in so much secrecy. I understand this time around, they because of modern times, they had to remove cell phones, and you know, the cardinals were not allowed to take in anything that might send out any messages. But you know, historians and people like yourself have researched this. What happens when the cardinals find out, or do they even find out?
Well, in fact, all information on the subject of the upcoming, on the subject of the of this conclave will be sealed for 100 years. So it was unlikely that you or I will ever find out what happened. The cardinals will be given back their cell phones once they're unlocked out of the Sistine Chapel. But they're under a strict vow of secrecy concerning everything to do with the conclave.
But do we understand, I guess I'm saying, I know that the way the voting goes, a team of cardinals, I guess they're called scrutineers, they open each ballot each time there is a vote. There have been several of them. And they read it out loud so that every cardinal can keep count of the votes. So my guess is that as the voting was going on, the cardinals were able to tally. And so they must have known in that moment that somebody won. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, what happens then? Is it a solemn moment, or is there a cheer? Do we know historically?
It's a very, very solemn moment. It's in the one record that we have when of papal election, which admittedly comes from the 15th century. It said that the room fell completely silent, and the cardinals turned into representations almost of their own statues, so still that they sit. So there isn't cheers. They aren't throwing their hats in the air. It's a very, very solemn moment. In the past, it used to be that the Sistine Chapel was set up with a series of different canopies over each one of the cardinals' chairs, and all of them at the moment of election all the canopies would fall apart from the one over the chair of the elected pope, indicating that previously they had been all equal, but now there was a superior. However, since there are too many cardinals for that to be possible in the Sistine Chapel right now, in this conclave, that hasn't happened.
Anthony, this has been fascinating, your background. And also, you have, as I said, a glimpse of what's happening here in modern day. Do you have a sense of people still traveling to the square? Are the bells still ringing?
Yes, there's an unending throng of people moving towards St. Peter's Square, which must be exactly what it looked like for many centuries, the whole population of Rome flooding into the piazza.
Anthony Maionlotti is in his apartment in Rome, where just a few minutes before noon East Coast time, a white wisp of smoke came from the smokestack above the Sistine Chapel, followed by ringing bells, indicating that a new pope has been elected. Anthony, thanks so much for your time. We might check in with you later. We will, of course, bring you news as soon as we know the name of the new pope. You're listening to Here and Now. Now, and as we've been reporting, just a few minutes before 12 noon East Coast time, white wisps of smoke came from the smokestack above the Sistine Chapel. There was some thinking in the crowd, the thousands of people who had gathered there waiting for the conclave of cardinals to elect a new pope, thinking that maybe this was the indication that a pope had been elected. But of course, there were some false starts yesterday, and so the crowd held its breath until the bells began tolling a few minutes later, indicating that, in fact, a new pope has been elected. And now Vatican Radio has announced that, in fact, a new pope has been confirmed. We're joined on the line by Stephen Pope, professor of theology at Boston College. And Stephen, your thoughts, your reflections on this election happening seeming kind of quickly. Stephen?
You know, Robin, I've got static. I can't hear you.
Oh, boy. Well, that's not good. Let's take 2 seconds to check that out while I continue to tell people what is happening in Rome. The crowds in the square chanting Viva il Papa, Long Live the Pope. We just heard from Anthony Maionlotti, who's in his apartment in Rome. He's the author of The Families Who Made Rome, has studied the conclaves. And he indicated that while 5 days or so was about the average, 2 days was pretty quick to have turned this election around. A complicated election in which each of 115 cardinals casts a ballot several times, twice in the morning, twice in the afternoon, in a very complicated way of doing that. They hide their handwriting, try to disguise their handwriting on the ballot so that it's not known who they vote for. And after each ballot is cast, they are sort of strung with a needle and thread and then burned in the smokestack. We're joined again by Stephen Pope, and we hope you can hear us now without static.
Much better.
There you go. Your thoughts on, it's been 2 days. Your thoughts on hearing that a Pope has been confirmed?
Well, I thought it would be quick. Most people did, because Cardinals have had a long time to deliberate and to think about it. So I think it might be a concern for some people that they didn't take enough time to really consider all of the issues that are at stake here.
We're not going to speculate too much, because from what we understand of the procedure here, in a few minutes we will find out who the new leader of the Catholic Church is. But we just heard again Anthony Maiolatti say that there were rumors flying around Rome, as they have been in the last few weeks, that one of the cardinals thought to be a lead contender, the Cardinal of Germany, may not have been. And that's what this election indicates. It's probably silly to try to speculate at this point.
Well, we won't have to speculate much further,
right.
Much longer. I think there is one big issue that we can look for in the appointment, which is if Cardinal Ratzinger has been elected Pope, it'll be a signal that the Cardinal's main concern is internal Catholic issues of orthodoxy and discipline and obedience. And if the Cardinals go in another direction for a Latin American or an African, that's a good signal that the Cardinals think that it's reaching out to the new church in the developing world is their primary concern.
Stephen Pope, hold there one second, because we're joined by Tracy Wilkinson, the Rome Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Tracy, I understand you are in the thick of it in Rome.
Yes, I am. I'm sitting on the edge of St. Peter's Square. People are running here, converging from all over the city, all over Rome. The bells continue to ring. We don't see the smoke anymore, but of course we saw that earlier. And we're waiting. We're looking out at the window with the red velvet curtains on it, waiting for the new Pope to appear.
Sounds as if Tracy herself just made a sprint to St. Peter's Square. Tracy, what are people? What are people saying?
I think right now there's a huge expectation. Who will it be? Who will it be? No one knows. There are different contingents from different nations. I see a Brazilian flag over there, and I see an American flag up in the front. So people are. Just eager to know, who the new leader is going to be.
Tracy, I've got Stephen Pope on the line. And Stephen, we hear from some listeners that, there's just too much emphasis on the election of the Pope. They may not be Catholic, or even if they are, they're a little disturbed by how much coverage the election of one leader of one church is getting. How important is this, who the next leader of this church is?
Well, I think the main reason for so much attention is it's in the wake of John Paul II's funeral, and that was well beyond the expectations of anyone who was an observer or who studies the Catholic Church. And it puts a lot of pressure on this Pope. It's a tough act to follow, as they say. And I think probably the media coverage indicates the celebrity status of John Paul II as much as anything else. I also think that there are so many contradictions and conflicts within the Catholic Church right now that it's attracted a lot of attention from people around the world who may not even be Catholic, but who realize there's a lot of political and economic significance to who the next Pope will be.
That's right. Tracy, can you estimate, for the pictures that we're seeing, it looks like St. Peter's Square is packed. Is that your sense there?
Yes, it is definitely packed. I can't count it for you from my vantage point, but it is definitely packed.
Are people speculating? Obviously they're speaking many different languages, but we heard at one point they were chanting Viva il Papa, Long Live the Pope. Or is it, as you said, just sort of breathless anticipation?
Yeah, and lots of cheering. Some people, as you say, are rooting sort of for their hometown favorite. They get some national cheers here and there. But yeah, a lot of Viva and Papa. And and excitement.
Stephen, as we just heard from Anthony Maianlahi, who's in his apartment in Rome, it's going to be about 30 minutes before we hear who the new Pope is. Your sense of what will happen next, and we just have a few seconds.
Well, I think that now it's just the plane's on the end of the runway, ready to take off, and people will receive the Pope with great enthusiasm and celebration. And then we'll wait and see what happens.
Stephen Pope is professor of theology at Boston College. We're going to keep you around, Stephen, because we want to get your reflections if, in fact, a pope is named, as it is expected, within the next half hour. Tracy Wilkinson, also, you stay right there. Rome Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Any news from Rome will bring it to you. You're listening to Here and Now. The sounds of thousands gathered in St. Peter's Square outside the Vatican in Rome. At about 12:04 East Coast time, the bells began tolling, confirming that the smoke signal that had come just a few minutes before was white, indicating that a new pope has been elected in the papal conclave. We spoke earlier to Anthony Maianlahi, a reporter who's in his apartment in Rome. He said the bells were tolling all over Rome, and he watched as pilgrims ran from their homes into the square. We also just spoke with Tracy Wilkinson, Rome Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, in the middle of the crowd in Rome, saying that people are waving the flags of their countries, still rooting for the hometown favorite cardinals, but waiting for the announcement of just who this new pope is. On the line is Stephen Pope, professor of theology at Boston College. And Stephen, while we're also waiting for the announcement, which is expected to come 45 minutes after the smoke signals and the tolling bells, let's keep taking a look at the challenges that the new pope faces. As you've said, a church that's tugged by both the conservative and the progressive wings, he has to address both, does he not?
He does, and the pope is supposed to be a bridge builder. In fact, the name Pontifex Maximus is the great bridge, greatest bridge, between different groups within the church. And if you can imagine trying to lead 1.1 million people, you know, it's a lot of different constituencies spread throughout the world. And the biggest gap, I think, is between the affluent, rather secularized North and the impoverished South. And the needs are so different in both groups. And that's why I think this election is so significant, and it's going to signal a direction for, I think, a long time in the future. How will the church respond to the needs of the developing world?
And as you and others have said, we will find out within we're expected to find out within the next half hour whether the choice for the new pope will be an older administrator who could serve as more of a transitional pope and be closer to John Paul II's legacy, or a younger, more progressive pastor, perhaps from Latin America or Africa. What are some of the needs that you mentioned that each of the wings of the church have right now?
Well, the world of the Catholic Church in the United States has very important pressing needs regarding the status of women, gender, and then related questions in sexual ethics and medical ethics. I think the issue of the sharing of power within dioceses, within the relationships between bishops and lay people, is a burning issue as well. And that's underscored by the crisis of sexual abuse that we're still recovering from.
And again, if there was criticism of John Paul II, it was that he had centralized the church and not paid enough attention to those needs.
Exactly, and his leadership style was both a blessing and really, in the long term, I think, a curse, in that it didn't tend to inspire grassroots movements, to pay attention to the governance of the church on a local level. So you notice when the cardinals here were confronted with the severe problems of sexual abuse, the first response they had was to go to Rome. And their first response really should have been to talk to bishops, to talk to pastors, to talk to lay people here, to come up with some important immediate solutions to a big problem.
And again, here in the Boston area, there was a lot of anger that Cardinal Bernard Law, who oversaw the crisis in Boston, was given a role in the last 2 weeks. Many felt that that was, you know, again, an insult to the Americans who were still concerned about the sex abuse scandal. But on the other hand, you have Africa, Latin America, with other needs and concerns.
Right. And, of course, the level of poverty is, I think, even unknown to most Americans. What people in Brazil live through, the lack of opportunities, the incidence of death from preventable diseases like malaria and tuberculosis is really a massive problem. And then on top of that, problems of AIDS, especially in Africa, but it's a growing problem in India as well. And these are problems that are life and death issues, and I think have to be the central concern for the next pope.
And if you've just joined us again, the next pope has apparently been elected and is going to soon be announced. And help us remember, Stephen Pope, how that happens. We understand the senior cardinal deacon appears on the basilica's balcony.
Right, the senior cardinal deacon appears and will say, I have a great joy to announce to you, we have a pope, and then the pope will come out and give a blessing to the crowd. And, of course, then the work begins, you know, how to go from being a cardinal, one of 115 electors, to now trying to take this church in a direction that's going to be constructive and hold the tensions from different parts of the church together in a constructive way. And I do want to underscore that there are common problems throughout the church, too, mm-hmm. both that unite the developing and less developed world and developed world, one of which is the problem of vocations. And that's a burning issue in the developing world as well.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we don't have as many. We have more converts and more baptisms than we have priests that can care for people. So the number of Catholic priests and sisters is going down, and the number of Catholics is going up. And so in Boston, for example, which is a very Catholic area and a place that has been historically rich in vocations, the average age of a pastor is 71 years old. The average age of a priest in the Archdiocese of Boston is 59, and we're not getting sufficient replacement numbers here, and we used to be a net exporter of priests for missions. So what does that say about places that are burgeoning with Catholic conversions in Africa? And in Latin America still, you have places. I know one priest from Guatemala who told me that there is one priest where he lives for 60,000 Catholics. This is why people are often attracted to Pentecostal religious movements in Latin America, mm. because they get more personal care.
Stephen Pope, I'm just going to ask you to hold there 1 second. Stephen's professor of theology at Boston College, Anthony Maianlotti, we spoke to you earlier. You were in your apartment in Rome, and now I understand are walking the streets.
That's right. I'm here along the Via della Conciliazione, the huge street that Mussolini built to celebrate the signing of the Concordat between the Pope and the Italian government, which created the existence of the Vatican City. And it's a madhouse. There are crowds running, not walking, running to St. Peter's Square through a sun shower because the clouds are parting. The sun is coming through. And it's a sort of amazing sight for this huge number of people, including nuns, running to the square.
And we know the square is already packed with thousands of people. As we said, bells rang earlier. In fact, there may be an announcement on the balcony right now. We are going to go to some sound from Associated Press. Let's listen.
Hermanos y hermanas.
Yes, there seems to be someone on
the balcony. Bien, chers frères et sœurs. Liebe Brüder und Schwestern. Dear brothers and sisters. Annuncio vobis gaudium magnum. Habemus papam.
The deacon announcing we have a pope.
eminentissimum ad reverendissimum dominum, dominum Iosephum. Sancte Romane Ecclesie, Cardinalem Ratzinger.
The new pope is the German Bishop Ratzinger. It has just been announced from the balcony at the Basilica. You can hear the crowd screaming. Let's just listen for a second.
Qui sibi nomen imposuit Benedicti decimi sexti.
We are listening to the sounds of the deacon announcing the new pope. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger of Germany is the new pope. He is being announced, his name is being announced from the balcony of the Basilica. We've got Stephen Pope on the line. Stephen, I believe that the deacon said the name of the new pope. Did you catch that? It sounded like Benedictus.
I didn't hear it. No, I didn't hear it. Someone on the line here just said Joseph Ratzinger.
Yeah, Joseph Ratzinger has been named, but as we said, he chooses a name. Let's keep listening to Rome, because we believe that the new pope is about to come out. They are now, it appears to be putting red bunting over the balcony where the new pope was just announced. It is Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger of Germany. As we have been hearing Stephen Pope at Boston College, as we've been hearing, the one of the things that the new pope has been doing in the last 40 minutes has been selecting his new name, the name he'll be known as Pope, and perhaps we'll hear that again. But the new name is Benedict the 16th. So this is the new pope. Joseph Ratzinger has chosen the name Benedict the 16th. Stephen, you have any thoughts on that choice while we watch bunting and a huge papal flag being draped over the balcony at the Basilica?
Well, it's kind of hard to absorb, to be honest with you, because this is a very radical choice.
Why is that?
Well, Cardinal Ratzinger is he's a person who evokes extreme reactions.
We've talked about them before. He's very conservative.
Yeah, he's not only conservative, but he's not a person with tremendous amounts of pastoral experience. He was a theology professor and then Archbishop of Munich, and he's been running the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith since 1981. His job has really been to be, to use an American phrase, the enforcer for the Vatican, and is probably single-handedly the person most responsible for Vatican suppression of liberation theology. He's issued a number of documents that have been flashpoints on gay marriage and the status of homosexuals in the Catholic Church. He's a person who's denounced feminism. This appointment is going to alienate a lot of Catholics that have been hanging in there, trying to find a middle way.
But on the other hand, the Cardinal, now Pope, just turned 78 this past weekend. You and I had talked about the possibility of an older pope being chosen and being considered a transitional pope, knowing that there would be another pope soon to follow.
Well, maybe, maybe not. Mm-hmm. We're living in the age of modern bioethics and medical science, mm-hmm. So one can't really tell that. I think, of course, he's not a 55-year-old man or something that you could say would be a lot longer. But it's not surprising in a way, because during the funeral and then, of course, in the mass the cardinals had right before they went in to vote. As the dean of the cardinals, Joseph Ratzinger had the center of attention and was able to make a very strong.
We're going to try speaking to Anthony Mayan-Lotti, who's right in the middle of the crowd at St. Peter's as the crowd greets the new Pope, Benedict XVI. Anthony, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
What is happening? What is the crowd doing?
Well, the crowd is massively pushing into the piazza. There are people with cameras all over, people holding up their cell phones to take pictures. And there's a ton of applause. People are also waving yellow papal scarves, the kind of scarves that you can easily buy if you're a pilgrim.
Anthony, I want to ask you, what happened when Joseph Ratzinger, his name was announced? What was the reaction?
There was an immediate gasp of recognition from the crowd. Everyone knew his name because he's the most prominent of the cardinals. Now he's making a wave to the crowd.
We see pictures of him here, and he seems to be surrounded by assistants. He keeps holding up his hands. He keeps putting his hands together as in triumph, as in victory.
Well, maybe he feels that. He's been...
He's speaking now. Let's listen.
He's intellectual. I wonder how many languages you'll speak.
Yeah, Anthony, could you interpret it for us, by the way?
Yeah, well, it's cool. I will.
Dopo il grande Papa Giovanni Paolo II.
The Lord Cardinal elected me. As for me to work in the fields of the Lord. He says that he takes comfort in the fact that the Lord can use even a deficient instrument, and he takes comfort from our prayers. The words of the Pope. In the knowledge of the risen Lord and trusting in Him, and in Mary, our blessed Holy Mother, we know that they will stand on our side. Thank you. Is that clear?
Yes, it's clear as it could be, considering that you're standing in the middle of St. Peter's Square and we're live on the radio in the States. Anthony, just to repeat for us, what was that last line from new Pope Benedict XVI, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger of Germany, as he spoke briefly before the crowd in St. Peter's Square? What was the last line about fairness?
His last line was invoking the protection of the risen Christ and His Most Holy Mother, Mary, who will stand on the Pope's side, on our side, is what he said. Yeah. But he may be using the papal plural.
Anthony, how did people react?
Everyone is applauding, and what's amazing is the incredible silence when he begins to speak. Everyone wants to hear his first words.
Yeah. Anthony Mayan-Lotti, there at St. Peter's Square, right outside the Vatican. Stand by for just a second. We've got Stephen Pope on the line here. Stephen, how do the comments of the new Pope compare to, for instance, Pope John Paul II when he first ascended?
I don't think there's that much in them, honestly, Robin. They're kind of boilerplate.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for your support, kind of, really giving the credit to the Holy Spirit. And trying to start off with a conciliatory note to unify the church.
Yeah. Again, he's speaking again, so we'll listen. This feels like a prayer.
Regibus et meritis, beati Maria semper virginis, beati Michaelis Arcangeli, beati Ioannis Baptiste, et sanctorum apostolorum Petri et Pauli, et omnium sanctorum, miseriator vestri omnipotens Deus, et dimissis peccat omnibus peccatis vestris, perducat vos Jesus Christus, ad vitam aeternam. Indulgentiam, absolutionem.
We're listening to the new Pope, just elected within the hour, Pope Benedict XVI, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger of Germany. He's appearing on a balcony at the Vatican above a huge crowd, St. Peter's Square, filled with thousands of people. Stephen Pope, we've been talking for weeks now about what the election of this Pope will mean. Again, we have listeners who have asked, why spend so much time on this? Well, the answer is presented to us today. This is a man who, as you have said, will not seem to be budging on a lot of issues that are important to churches, Catholic churches in Latin America, in Africa. This is a story about public policy as well as about a church.
Well, you know, that's right. And oftentimes, I think one response will be that a person changes when they take a different role within the church. And it was Cardinal Ratzinger's job as the leader of the Congregation for Christian Faith to monitor the teachings of theologians and to make sure that orthodoxy was being followed throughout the church. It may be that he has a different approach now that he is the Pope, that he has to be a balancing factor, that he has to consider the well-being of people all over the world and recognize that cultures are moving in different directions at different times. I'm not optimistic about it, but that's a possibility.
Well, in fact, and you know, obviously from that point of view that you've been expressing, others might be thrilled at this choice for what it means. But, you know, there was the hope, and you had said this, on the part of Latin American Catholics, African Catholics, that there might be a pope elected that might switch the focus of the church to their countries. And we just want to note again the choice of the name. Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger has picked the name Pope Benedict XVI, Benedict, the patron saint of all of Europe. And that this cardinal has made comments about the church returning to Europe. It would seem to even more drive home the point that his views are going to be Europe-centric.
Well, that's a major concern, is the fact that Europe is highly secularized. Most Catholic populations are attending Mass in about somewhere between 5 and 10% regular church attendance. So the question is whether Cardinal Ratzinger, now Pope Benedict XVI, will have a helpful way of addressing that issue. And that remains to be seen.
We should also mention as well, this is a man that the world is going to get to know, as they got to know Pope John Paul II. He's considered charming, funny, fluent in four languages, a very good speaker. And apparently his first trip is going to be to his home country, because we understand that the new pope is already locked into a trip in mid-August. The Catholic Youth Day gathering is happening in Cologne, Germany, and John Paul II had promised that a pope would visit. So very soon he will be returning to Germany, and that will be a thrill, obviously, for German Catholics.
One thing that's significant, Robin, is, you know, if the cardinals are concerned about secularization in Europe, it may be something of a parallel to electing John Paul II in the face of the Cold War, that now the war is over secularization. The difficulty with that hypothesis, though, is that the success of the Pope in revitalizing the Polish church was really limited once the Iron Curtain fell down. In fact, Polish rates of church attendance have been deteriorating quite significantly in recent years.
Stephen Pope is a professor of theology at Boston College. Stephen, we always enjoy your input. Thank you so much for being with us on this day, the day that Pope Benedict XVI, the new pope, has been elected by the papal conclave at a few minutes before 12 noon East Coast time. The smoke came from the smokestack indicating